He's more of a teen therapist and family therapist than, like, I don't know. I'd like to get a fresh start kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I would go back and see my therapist that I saw a couple years ago.
I mean, like, I held no ill will against him or anything. I think that the problem was that I got into a habit of lying to him. And, like, I know that I can get away with it.
Right.
So I don't... I've kind of broken it.
You need to find someone who, like, will catch you when you're bullshitting them.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, I had a great therapist who, if I was starting to bullshit her at all, she'd be like, are you lying to me? And I'd be like, no, I'm not lying. Yeah, like, you're just not being honest. I'm like,
stretching the truth.
Exactly.
Everything is fine.
Yeah. So, you should probably do that.
Yeah, definitely. It's on the list. I need to go see a real doctor, too. Like, I haven't, my doctor for the last 22 years has been my, or 24 years, has been the same pediatrician I went to since I was born. Yeah.
You haven't seen an adult doctor yet?
No. I don't have
one. At what age do you age out of a pediatrician?
I don't know. Probably about 7 years ago.
Okay.
I figure once you're 18, you stop seeing
a pediatrician. I stopped seeing a pediatrician when I was 13.
Yeah, but girls are different than guys.
That's fair.
Guys don't have any of that going on.
So, right.
Like, there's no reason for me to go find an adult physician because I don't need, like, an OB
right.
or anything like that. I'm just, I need a general practitioner. And my general practitioner happens to practice on children.
You haven't been a child for quite some time.
That's true. But yeah, no, so I need to find an adult doctor because I have all these questions about my body and I don't want to go ask my pediatrician.
Who does your dad see?
What? I have no idea. I think I'm going to go see Carly's doctor.
That's probably good.
Mm-hmm. It'll make insurance and stuff easy too.
Sometimes they do like double dip deals.
Yeah, I'll get a double dip deal.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what they're called.
But... I mean, like, I'm going to spend like 5 hours there. So I better, you know, have my stuff sorted.
Is your body breaking that much that you don't know what
to do? It's not breaking. I have curiosities okay. and, like, very mild concerns. Like, I have a mole. It's either here behind my sideburn or here. I'm not sure which.
I think it's on the other one.
Like, here-ish.
Yeah.
That I don't know where it came from. And, like, I haven't had short hair in a long time, so when I cut my hair short last year, I noticed it for the first time. I haven't been to the doctor in a year, so.
My gosh.
Stuff like that.
So you haven't been to the doctor after you did all that fasting?
No.
It didn't occur to you that maybe you should do that?
No. There were no real negative side effects from it. So, what's the point? Who's texting me? But yeah, so I need to find a new shrink and a new regular doctor.
You call him a shrink?
Is that not a colloquialism?
I don't think so anymore. I just call him a therapist.
Therapist is so many syllables.
Fine. Counselor?
That's the same amount of syllables. Dear God.
So, what exactly are we going to talk about with therapy?
We are going to talk about the benefits of it. The Avengers?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Your favorite Avenger.
My favorite Avenger?
Yep.
I have a favorite Avenger?
Yeah, what's your favorite Avenger?
I don't know who my favorite Avenger is.
You can't think of who your favorite Avenger is? Mine's Black Widow.
That's such a girl answer.
Scarlett Johansson's really hot.
No doubt.
And she's such a badass.
But she's like a really not super superhero.
But she's a badass. I know, that's why I like her.
Oh.
Because she's not a super.
Probably Spider-Man. Is my favorite Avenger? What do you mean, why?
Yeah, why?
Because Spider-Man is like an extension of my teenage angst. Especially, not technically this current Spider-Man,
okay.
but The Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
Because the way The Amazing Spider-Man's origin story came about is very like, I'm going to use this to get back at my bullies. It was more in the comic books than in the actual.
Right.
But really, none of the Avengers are interesting to me. Like, The Avengers is not even close to my favorite comic book stuff.
What's your favorite comic book stuff?
Anti-heroes and X-Men. So I really like all X-Men. I love specifically Deadpool and Wolverine.
I've never seen Deadpool.
What? You must watch
Deadpool. I have never seen Deadpool.
You must watch Deadpool. Both of them. Some of the best superhero movies ever.
Interesting.
I tell no lies. I can't oversell them.
I'm very much behind on my movies.
Clearly.
As we've established the last two episodes.
But yeah, Deadpool, Spider-Man, or X-Men characters mostly. So I really like all the original X-Men series. I really like Deadpool had a book where it was a whole series with Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
And so Wolverine's like the straight man. Like, very, you know, he's like the mature adult, mm-hmm. and Deadpool's like the one making sex jokes.
Yeah.
So that dichotomy is really funny. And then X-Force, which is Deadpool's X-Men, because the X-Men don't want Deadpool.
Got it.
So he makes his own X-Men with hookers and Blackjack.
So good.
And then, like, I like V for Vendetta, I like The Punisher, I like the darker, like, the Alan Moore Batman.
Sure.
So yeah, anti-heroes are my bread and butter.
Black Widow's almost an anti-hero.
She is, but I've never like read any of those books.
Yeah.
And I don't think that her character development in The Avengers was great movie-wise.
That's fair. Movie-wise, it was not. But I'm very excited she's getting her own.
Yeah, I think that if like the origin story is good, maybe I'll have a new appreciation. Maybe I'll pick up some books.
I think you will. So. Therapy.
Therapy. This is therapy for me. This guy behind you on the wall, Tony Sly.
Yeah.
He died young, late 40s. Some of the saddest and best acoustic music about mental health.
Interesting.
Tony Sly. He's got a whole album called 12 Song Program.
Interesting.
Which is, he wrote through his alcoholism.
Right.
Super good.
I will have to give that a listen.
Yeah. Side note. There's a song on there called Therapy.
Oh.
It's all hearkening back.
Who are we?
We are Matt and Tori.
And what are we?
Podcasters.
This is Salt the Earth.
Oh.
Episode 7.
I see where you're going. Yeah. Cue dubstep.
Cue dubstep right here.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
I'm Tori.
I'm Matt.
He's Matt.
This is Matt. We're talking about therapy today, specifically the benefits to it, the reason why all Catholics and all people should pursue mental health counseling. Even if it's cost prohibitive, there are solutions that you can pursue. And we're going to talk about like the different kinds of therapy that exist and what all those mean and what might be your best choice if you were to pursue that. And we're going to talk about the benefits that had for us.
Basically, we're talking about our stories with therapy because we're not experts in this.
No.
We know a lot of experts in this, though.
Mm-hmm.
And we would love to have them on sometime. So if you're one of our therapist friends or counselor friends,
you know who we're talking to. Listen to this show, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
All of the fans are Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yep, that's going to be there. Our fans' names.
If you want to hop on the episode with us one day and talk about therapy, you are more than welcome to do so. Just hit us up.
Open invitation. Even if you're not one of our therapist friends and you just are a therapist and you listen,
cool.
Go for it. So yeah, therapy. Tori, would you care to share your therapy story?
I would love to. I actually had
introduced your origin story.
My origin story. I actually had two different starts with therapy.
Okay.
So I have bipolar disorder, which I was diagnosed when I was like 19 or 20. Mm-hmm. It's bipolar depression disorder. Depression. It's one of those. But when I was really young, when I was like 13, I saw my first therapist, and it was a grief counselor or grief therapist. My aunt had passed away suddenly. And I was, like, super upset about it and angsty about it. And it was not the first person I had lost in my life, but it was one of many great impacts in my life. So my mom took me to a counselor. And all I really remember, not that it was that long ago, but I think I just blanked out half of this memory, is sitting in this office with this woman and my mom, and this woman asking my mom why I'm here. Like, not even talking to me. going through the list of what I'm doing and what I'm not doing, you know, according to my mom, like what was wrong right. with me. I didn't say anything the first meeting except maybe like, yes, I'm sad. No, I'm mad. Yes, I'm sad. No, I'm mad. And then leaving with a sheet of paper saying the 12 steps of grief that I never read because I couldn't tell you like past step two. 12
steps of grief?
Yeah. There are 12, or the 12 stages or 6 stages of grief. See, I didn't read the paper.
Yeah, there's... Oh, I don't even remember them now. Bargaining and acceptance are the last two. I know that.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I never read the paper.
It's like kind of debunked science now, which is why I'm surprised that they gave that to you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, she wasn't great. She was kind of mean. I'm sure she was a great therapist to other people. She was just not who I needed.
Yeah.
So, this is a good plug for if you are seeing a therapist and you don't get along with them very well, or you don't like them, or you don't feel like there's a good bond or a relationship there, find another therapist.
Yeah.
They are not offended.
No. Especially if you're always seeing a therapist, it means you can probably afford a therapist.
Yes.
And so you can probably afford a different therapist, one that will better suit your needs. If it's, you know, money's tight or time is tight, there are options for you. There's digital therapy where you... like webcam chat with a therapist instead of going to their office, so you can save some time that way. Options exist. So, yeah, definitely change your therapist if you're not getting out anything out of it or not getting enough out of it even.
Right. So that was my first experience with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
My second experience happened when I was like 16 or 17 years old and I was dealing with major depressive disorder. And I was in high school and I had gotten caught by the school counselor for self-harming. Not caught, I was tattled on by a friend, which was good. Mm-hmm. Like, I should have been.
Tattle on your friends.
Yeah, tattle on your friends. Especially if you're a high school teenager. It was just the way the situation was handled was not great. But that's a story for another day. So I started seeing a therapist again for that. And I think I saw 2 different therapists at this point. I went back to the original grief counselor one, and then she finally said, like, I am not... I'm not an expert in this stage of, like, I needed someone who dealt with self-harm and depression in adolescence. And I was no longer grieving. Like, it had been 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So I met a new therapist who I started seeing when I was 16 or 17 years old, who I still see to this day when I need to. And she was amazing. She was the one who would call me out on my bullshit when I was, just feeding her crap.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one who taught me how to cope with things. So if something was stressing me out a lot or when I just couldn't handle all the feelings that I had built up inside, she taught me how to cope with that rather than hurting myself.
Uh-huh.
And that was just a really good therapy for me and it was cognitive therapy, which there's lots of different types of therapy.
Right.
And cognitive therapy is what really helped me restructure my brain to see what my original thought process was is not the right thought process. And it's just I always called it my sad brain. My sad brain was trying to get me to do something harmful, where my healthy brain was just taking a little nap. So we had to reboot my healthy brain. So that's like a short snippet of my therapy experience. What about you?
My introduction to therapy, I was in high school. I was extremely depressed. I was like self-harming behind the scenes. No one knew. I was suicidal ideation, the whole nine. And it all kind of exploded. Like, I had been fighting with my family, but it all kind of exploded in one go.
Mm-hmm.
And after that very traumatic experience, my parents found an adolescent therapist who was dealing with those sorts of things. My first meeting was very similar to yours.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there grumpy saying, this is stupid. This is a waste of my time. Like, sitting here makes me want to kill myself. So you're not really going to be doing me any favors by sending me to this place. And it kind of evolved. The first meeting, it was like my whole family was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just my mother and I. And then we kind of like tag teamed in and out of the office.
Mm-hmm.
So like she would talk to him for a little bit, then I would.
Mm.
And then we kind of come together and try and find some situation. And it didn't really get anything out of it for me until it was one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I saw him for several years and, infrequently since then, probably since I was like 20, 21.
Mm-hmm.
I've only gone, once a month or even a couple times a year more recently. And I should probably seek out a new therapist now
mm-hmm.
because I'm in a spot where I think that therapy would be beneficial for me again, mm-hmm. where I haven't seen that until relatively recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my old therapist wouldn't do the trick anymore. I wouldn't get out of it.
Right. Well, especially if he's an adolescent therapist, right. You're no longer an adolescent.
Exactly.
I think I also see my therapist very infrequently. The last time I saw her was two or three years ago. And I went back to see her after not seeing her for about a year. And I actually went back to see her because I just needed help figuring out how to handle financials. That was my reason, is that it was stressing me out so much that I knew mm-hmm. it was something. And so we talked and we had three meetings about financials until my half sister passed away. And it was just good timing that I was already seeing her when that happened. Uh-huh. So then we worked through that. But you can see a therapist for all sorts of reasons. And if you just need help figuring out how life works sometimes, mm-hmm. they're a good resource out there for you that I wish more people took advantage of, especially if you are a parent of a young teenager or a teenager in general. Most teenagers need to see a therapist
mm-hmm.
for one reason or another.
Yep. Just to get them into a healthier space in general.
Mm-hmm. Why would you say therapy has been beneficial in your life, even as an adult?
So, I think that once I got to a place, well, a big reason was I had like multiple undiagnosed mental conditions mm-hmm. that I was not handling properly, right? So, once I kind of got like suicidality semi-sorted out,
mm-hmm.
I was still going to therapy, so we were, kind of expanding our horizons beyond, like, why does everything suck all the time into, a lot broader
mm-hmm.
categories. And, one of the things we started discussing was that, like, I would get really frustrated about, like, ordering systems, like, anything that is ordered
mm-hmm.
and, like inherent disorder that comes with that. And I would get frustrated when things don't happen right. And I would get frustrated if I wasn't walking in a certain way or talking a certain way, mm-hmm. or like touching my hands and things like that. It was super frustrating for me. And it was really distracting.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the beginning, my therapist thought that I just had like ADHD or something,
mm-hmm.
Which is a common diagnosis for those types of situations. But we ended up doing some more cognitive testing and I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's something that I had in the back of my mind for a long time, but never really considered. And, we worked through a lot of, like, coping mechanisms. We talked about medication. He told me the kind of medications I would take and what they would do. I chose not to go the medical route mm-hmm. and instead pursue coping mechanisms and dealing with it that way.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was very supportive and understanding of the situation, and she wasn't like a lot of people find OCD entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is funny. This guy is in mental drama. And like I was in a place then where I could at least kind of take the piss.
Right.
And I got it. But it still wasn't great.
No.
So it was good having someone who was kind of in my corner the whole time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one way that helped me, because I was not handling early adulthood well.
Mm-hmm.
I was not doing well in classes. I was just having all sorts of issues with day-to-day life and having those coping mechanisms, and even just having a diagnosis and understanding what these things going on in my head were was mm-hmm. extraordinarily beneficial to me.
Well, good. Yeah, I remember sitting in a classroom. I went away to college originally mm-hmm. before I came home, and I came home because I was dealing with my mental health issues, and I had originally been diagnosed with just depression, mm-hmm. like regular depression. And I came home from school, and I dropped out of school, and I came home and I said I needed help because I was still self-harming. I was dealing with suicidal thoughts. I was absenting myself from social events and other things that are, like, totally against my personality.
Right.
I was doing all those things. And so I started seeing my therapist again, and I got diagnosed with major depressive disorder after a short stint in a outpatient center.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of those things that helped me, was actually having a diagnosis finally, besides just depression.
Right.
And then a couple years later, my other doctor was talking to me and we were in therapy and she goes, Tori, I don't think you have major depressive disorder. I'm like, I don't care what I have, but just give it a label so I can have a name. Yeah. And then fix it so I can be a normal functioning adult, because I was failing classes. I've always been a good student, but I was failing classes. I was skipping classes.
Right.
I was avoiding work. I was losing jobs. I was quitting jobs. She said, I think you have bipolar depression disorder. And that was one of the first times that I was able to relate to a family member of mine who had it. And it was one of those comforting things to me that if I could do this differently than my family member did, I could live a different life.
Right.
And that was super helpful, just to, sometimes people don't like having labels.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, even having that label for you helped to move past that frustration that you were feeling into, this is what it is, and this is how we can fix it.
Right.
And I think there's a lot that comes into that. Even spiritually, I was always very open with my doctor about, I'm a practicing Catholic. My faith life is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, my faith life might be the only reason why I'm still alive. And this is what I need to figure out. And in those things, I had to learn to forgive others and to forgive myself. And therapy helped me do that a lot, because without therapy, I don't think I would have ever forgiven myself for the things that I had done, not only to myself, but to the things I put my family through and my friends through, and to forgive those who had hurt me in the past. And I think that's a big step that adults need to take, is learning how to forgive yourself and then learning how to forgive others.
Right. Yeah. I think that a lot of, adults, this is what I was going to say earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a specific friend who has been struggling with social situations and how to handle them. And they just don't do well in certain situations. And I've been telling them for a while, like, hey, you should really go see a shrink about this. I think it'll be beneficial for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're resistant to the idea. But it's just one of those things that, like, I've been so pushing for it because there's so much potential there for something more. This is a person that, like, could be doing a lot more in life, but is stuck kind of at ground level because they're not dealing with their mental health properly.
Right. And I think that's a common thing. You know, there's always, like, BuzzFeed articles or clickbait articles about how to deal with your mental health better. In my opinion, if they're not, I mean, yes, self-coping and stuff like that, there is things that you can do by yourself in order to help further yourself.
Sure, yeah. Go to the gym, eat better, meditate.
Pray, whatever, journal, go for a walk. But there's also things that, like, sometimes you just need to figure out why your brain's working the way it is. And if you're one of those people and you know something's wrong and you're not taking a step to fix it and you're an adult, there's something that you need to come and decide. Do you want to live this way forever?
Right.
Or do you want to move on with your life and better yourself? Because your brain's just not working the way it should, and that happens.
Yeah.
And I still think there's a lot of shame that's inherited with the idea of going to see a therapist. For instance, I'm not one to talk about my past self-harm or depression or anything very often for two reasons. One, because of my job. My students don't need to know what I went through. It's not their business. Two, I'm done and over with it. It doesn't affect me anymore. Every once in a while, I have issues with bipolar disorder and, you know, my moods will swing up and down, or I'll have a few days where I'm super low or a few days where I'm super high and vice versa. But for the most part, it doesn't affect my daily life. It's not inhibiting me in any way. And it doesn't matter what happened in the past, because I went through that, I fixed it, and I got the help I needed. And I think so many people are afraid to move to that step to get the help they need, that they just are stalled. And then they're just in that shame of, I need help, but I don't know what to do.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. So, for Catholics specifically, do you think that Catholics should seek out a Catholic therapist? And by extension, do you think that a spiritual director is the same as a therapist?
No. So I think I think it's totally up to you whether you seek out a Catholic therapist or a regular therapist. The only difference, truly, between a Catholic therapist and a regular therapist is the Catholic's going to bring in more of your coping skills in terms of your faith life. Most of the time, you're capable of doing that yourself. But if you're very gung-ho on seeing a Catholic therapist, that's awesome. I know some great Catholic therapists out there who do a really good job. There are some Catholic therapists out there who won't even touch your faith life at all, simply because that's not their job. That's not their primary mm-hmm. job. They just also happen to be Catholic, and they know where you're coming from if some of your issues are stemming from problems right. with the church. But if you're dealing with spiritual struggles, you know, dryness in prayer or struggles within the church or whatever, that's a spiritual director job. And those are the people who are going to help you organize your prayer life, figure out best ways to succeed in your spiritual life, if that yeah. makes sense. And help you organize your thoughts and your prayers and sometimes just come to better understand what's going on in your faith life. You know, if you're dealing with a period of dryness in your faith life, where you feel like God's not there at all, he's totally absent, and maybe there is no God, that's a great situation that you need to see a spiritual director, and they can help you point out all the ways in which God truly is present in your life. You just don't have the knowledge yet to see that.
Right.
So that's my opinion on Catholic therapists versus spiritual directors.
I think I'm right there with you. I have experience with both.
Mm-hmm.
I guess not obviously, but yeah, I have experience with both therapists and spiritual directors. My therapist was secular. I'm pretty sure that he was Protestant, but we didn't really get into religion beyond just the things that I was dealing with related to my religious life.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it wasn't like I don't necessarily believe in a God or not. It was just a lot more like, this is what's going on at church.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the extent of the religious conversation, because I wasn't really struggling as much with my spiritual life at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was kind of the one thing that I had.
Right.
Where when I would go and seek out spiritual direction, it was a lot more about like, you know, either like when I was nervous coming up to the wedding mm-hmm. about like, I wasn't nervous about getting married, but like I was nervous about, you know, what does a true Catholic future look like mm-hmm. when I'm committing to someone for the rest of my life. That's a really big thing. And
right.
I wanted some guidance on how to approach that situation. Or when I was going to propose, it was mm-hmm. the same kind of conversation. It was, you know, what is this next step going to do? How does that look for me?
Right.
Because I wasn't sure. I wasn't entirely sure how I wanted it to look for myself,
right.
where I wanted to be with that. I have seen people, and I do know people who use them interchangeably,
mm-hmm.
who either don't seek therapy because they have a spiritual director or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be the former more than the latter, where, you know, they probably should see a therapist and probably a secular therapist. But they're, you know, they're talking to a spiritual director who's probably, doing as much harm as good.
Right.
By like just saying yes to them and, you know, indulging in whatever their particular
right.
Thing is. I don't know how productive that kind of situation is. I know it wouldn't be productive for me. Maybe some people it's different, but I would encourage people, if you're seeing a spiritual director and you think that it's doing it for you, maybe even still try finding a therapist. I think that there are different things that need to get covered that you probably aren't covering in spiritual direction.
Yeah, and I think if you're seeing a spiritual director, but you kind of think you need to see a therapist, and you're not because you think the spiritual director can handle it, they can't. They're not equipped to be a counselor for you.
Right.
In that sense, they're not equipped to diagnose you or to help you medically, and that's what a therapist can do. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of different, you know, not all, like, I saw a psychologist, so she couldn't prescribe medicine, which is fine. So I saw a psychiatrist who could,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. But you need to find something that works for you, because therapy has been super beneficial to a lot of people's lives. It's been beneficial to our lives, and it's been beneficial to my faith life. And I'm sure it has been to Matt's
Definitely.
Too, because if you have your secular life in order, you have more time that you can give to your world. And for the people who think that dealing with a mental illness is a failure on your part, it's not. it's just part of living in this broken world.
Right. I agree.
Untreated mental illness leading to sin. I mean, that could definitely be a thing. But I don't know if it'd be a sin at that point if it's due to a mental illness.
Okay, so if I have an untreated mental... I don't know. I feel like... So, like, we know self-harm is a sin, right? Right. Is it still a sin if you're depressed and self-harming?
Well,
I would think so. You probably still want to go confess that.
You would want to confess it still, but I don't think it's necessarily as much of a sin as we think it might be, because you're doing it due to circumstances outside of your own control at the time.
Right.
Now, people who practice self-flagellation in their spiritual life? Flagellation. Okay. That would be considered a sin, I believe, because you're harming your body.
Ooh, I don't know. You just said two things in a row that are going to trigger some people.
I know I am.
First, you said that sins are different weights. That right
Well,
there,
I didn't mean... I didn't necessarily mean that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. Yeah, no, I don't...
We won't touch that one.
A chelus? Cilus? How do you pronounce that?
I don't know.
It's a leg chain that has spikes on it.
Oh.
And you wear it tight so that when you walk, you feel pain. It's like a constant, ever-present reminder of God, apparently, in your devotion to Him.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's like it fits along with like the holy bondage to Mary.
Yeah.
But like a far more extreme right. sort of way.
I don't know. I guess this is something we'd have to look into more.
Mm-hmm.
My go-to thing with self-harm is if you're suffering from depression, kind of like with suicide.
Mm-hmm.
If someone takes their life by suicide and they're dealing with a mental illness, that's not any fault of their own. You know, to an extent, yes, it is.
Right.
I don't want to trigger anyone. Yes, suicide's a choice, but when you're in a state like that, it seems like it's the only choice.
Right.
And the church has said that they can't condemn people who are struggling with such a cross like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a difference in that. That if you're dealing with a mental illness that is causing you to harm yourself because you don't know how to deal, there is no other option for you.
Right.
In that moment. You know, especially if you're seeking treatment and help, I think there's a difference.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I'm with that.
Cool.
Ooh, another song recommendation. Sick and Tired by Pasadena. It's another good depression hit.
I never was one to listen to sad songs when I was sad.
Oh, listen to sad songs all the time. Part of my, like, being a huge empath mm-hmm. is, like, I get a lot of emotion from music. So, like, it'll alter my mood depending on the music that I listen to. So, like, if I'm listening to Andrew WK and the lyrics are all party, 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 literally.
Wow.
Then I'm going to be in a better mood, or like I'm going to kind of be a little bit cheerier.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm listening to like Tony Sly's music, it's going to be a lot more dialed down. Which is its own problem because I kind of have a tendency of listening to sad music when I'm sad and making it worse.
Right.
But at the same time, like having that emotion also kind of lets me work out why I'm feeling certain ways, right? Or like okay. I'll even notice like, oh, I'm in a weird mood because I'm listening to this music, where like I won't notice that I'm in a weird mood until I make that choice.
Interesting.
And recently I've been learning how to play some music on different instruments, and playing sad music helps me kind of clean the system.
Now that part makes sense to me. Like doing something productive mm-hmm. when you're sad does make sense. Listening to sad music when you're sad would just make you more sad, in my opinion.
It has a tendency of doing that.
I think that's it. Anything else, Matt?
Nope.
All right.
I think we're good. Copyright, Salt the Earth Podcast 2019. Trademark, copyright, restricted trademark.
Signing off.
Hasta la vista.